Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching from God's Word you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to Him. If you're ever in the Madison, Alabama area, we'd love for you to worship with us on Sundays at 8:30 or 10:30 a.m. If you have any other questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, find us at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to also check out our Bible study podcast, Madison Church of Christ Bible Studies. Thanks again for stopping by.
As I was opening my communion this morning, and I guess the first time in 5 years, which is kind of crazy that we've been here 5 years, had a false start and dropped a lot of it on my pants. So Derek had the idea. He said, you could just stand behind the fern and not move. Then I thought, if y'all saw me be still, that might be more of a distraction, like what's happening. But then seriously, right after this happened, Cruz wrote a note and he said, why don't you be more careful when you set the table? So with that, let's talk about setting the table today. So one of the probably most intriguing characters in all of Scripture to me has to be the person Rahab. Part of what makes Rahab so amazing and I think so connecting for a lot of us is what she overcame, but also what she became. And if you don't remember, or maybe you don't know, that's okay. In the book of Joshua, there's a lady in Scripture that had lived her life working in the profession as a prostitute. And one of the things that a lot of scholars agree on, that part of the reason why she maybe went into that industry was because of the pagan culture that she was living in that fed into that. Like, we don't really know, but what we do know is it's pretty incredible that she took a very bold act of faith that could have got her killed by choosing to protect the spies. But I think why we also love the narrative of Rahab is because that this lady that used to be a prostitute is now in the very lineage of Jesus Christ mentioned in the Gospel of Matthew. But what I really want us to also think about is, like, what was it that led her to make that bold move of faith? What was it that opened her heart to the possibility of God? Like, what was it that made her do something that could have gotten her killed? See, where Rahab lived in Jericho had its own rules. They had their own social arrangements. They had their own kingdom, and they all had their own lowercase g gods. But if you remember, there was a whole nother kingdom that was outside her window. And it was a kingdom that had its own rules. It had its own social arrangements. It had its own God, and it had its own kingdom. And if you remember a very important line when Rahab decided to make this amazing, bold move of faith, she said this, that she had heard about God. Think about that for just a second. The kingdom that she had just heard about outside of her window encouraged her to make a bold move of faith. The reason why I mention that to you today is outside of every person's window is also the same opportunity. The opportunity of a whole new kingdom. And for Rahab, the offer she got was not just to leave a profession, but it was actually to become something. That outside every person's window, they have the opportunity of a brand new kingdom with a whole new set of rules, a new awesome social arrangement, God's family on earth, the church, a new kingdom in a holy, loving, powerful, caring God. And it's with that in mind that I want us to get into the part that I know we've been all kind of ready to get to in this series, is talking about finally doing what Jesus did. And if you're new with us this morning or a guest, over the past few weeks, we've been talking about what it looks like to live out the ways of Jesus. Because we kind of all grew up, a lot of us, I guess around my age group, with the WWJD thing, that we want to do what Jesus does. But in order to do what Jesus does, we talked about that we first have to spend time with him, to be with him. And if you remember what we talked about in that God did not give through Jesus like these tasks to Peter, and he didn't give these tasks to Mark to go instantly perform miracles or instantly go preach or instantly do the work of ministry. He simply said, all I want you to do is just be with me, spend time with me. And then once they spent that time with him, then they started to become like him. And so for 2 weeks, we looked at what it looks like to become. And please don't forget that when we talked about that in this series, we said every single person is becoming something. There's no such thing as neutrality. There's no such thing as just status quo. We're all actually becoming something. We're either becoming more loving or not. We're becoming more caring or not. We're becoming more like Jesus or we're not. We're all becoming something. The question we have to ask is, what is it? And as we start to try to answer that question through the eyes of Jesus Christ, then we can finally start doing the things that Jesus did. And so we see everything different. And so if we start to see the needs around us and start seeing the things that Jesus sees, and if we know our neighbors are looking out their window too, seeing things, the question we have to ask is, what are they seeing? What are we presenting? Do they see the reality and the opportunity of what they can become in this brand new kingdom? And so I want to make this personal for us, the idea of doing what Jesus did. Because if you remember in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul mentions this word, first fruits, twice. And to them, this meant a lot because the idea of first fruits was something that would happen in the autumn time. Like the tree would have this little bud just like you would see there. And this was letting you know that something's coming. But in the Greek here, when it says that Jesus is the first fruit, the idea is that when Jesus came to this earth, he was like the picture of what was to come, what we could become. He was what one scholar said was the prototype. So when Jesus came to this earth and was those first fruits, what the whole point was is that you and I have the opportunity to become like him. It's not just, hey, Jesus did some awesome stuff. He's a great man that had a great ministry. When he says first fruits, he's saying, hey, we have the opportunity to become what he became in him, to do what he did in him. And so even think about the incarnation, what we talk about when Jesus left heaven to come to this earth. And when we talk about that incarnation, a lot of times what we only focus on is the fact that the reason why he came to this earth was to save me from my sins. And don't get me wrong, that is part of the reason why Jesus came to this earth, to save us from our sins. But he also came to save us not just from something, but to something. That he gave us the opportunity to join in him and with him what he does in his ministry. So what Jesus does becomes our ways, and his thoughts start to become our thoughts. The point of the incarnation of Jesus was to save us from our sins, but also for us to adopt the very pattern of life that he lived. I think about this text in John 14, and I tell you, this is so encouraging. Because if you're the disciples and you hear Jesus say, hey guys, you're going to have the opportunity very soon to do greater things. Do you know what those greater things that he, you know, the things he just did? Like he had just raised somebody. He just healed a blind man and helped a lame person. And then he says, oh guys, y'all get to do greater stuff than that. You're like, greater than that? Like you just help somebody walk and you help somebody see, we get to do something greater than that. He's like, oh, absolutely. And when we think greater things, we might think power, and we might think something physical. And guys, I can't fully understand the depth of what the greater things are, but here's what I do know. It's not lesser things. And so what are those greater things? Well, the greater things are the fact that we have the opportunity to point people to Jesus. That we have the opportunity to go from death to life, and we have the opportunity to be a group of people that are spiritually transformed. The disciples thought the peak, the greatest point was the miracle. Jesus says, no, what I'm letting you know is that the greatest impact is love. That when we talk about greater things, we're not talking about physical, raw power. We're talking about like a sphere of influence, a sphere of impact. That's what we're talking about, and that's what you and I get to be a part of. So when we talk about doing what Jesus does, that's what we're talking. We have the opportunity, just as he was that prototype, to actually live it out. So here's what I want to do today. I want to introduce number one. Over the next 2 weeks, Brandon's going to introduce preaching the gospel and demonstrating the gospel. But these were the three patterns or the three rhythms to Jesus' ministry. And the first one you'll notice is this, making space for the gospel, i.e. hospitality. Now, if this sounds familiar, it should, because a little over a year ago, our shepherds got up here and challenged us as a church to be more centrally focused on fellowship, which is time spent together, but then also to focus on hospitality, which is different than fellowship. See, hospitality comes from two words. It's actually a combo word. The first part is philo, which means love for the, you know, brotherly love, like the love that you have from friend to friend. But then the other part of the definition, xenos, which is the stranger. So hospitality means the love, not the fear or the hate of, but the love of the stranger, the foreigner, or what they would have a lot of times during this day, the sojourner. And so I want to frame this with three different texts. And since we talked about this kind of recently, I wanted to pick ones that we didn't talk about in light of hospitality. And the first one is what happened with Jesus and Zacchaeus. Now, y'all might remember this. When you were a kid, we used to sing a song about Zacchaeus. Do y'all remember what it was? Zacchaeus was a what? A wee little man. And I've always believed that you never, ever, ever call a man wee. You don't recover from that, okay? But for real, though, that they would say Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he. And in that song, one of the things that we highlight usually is what Zacchaeus did. Because in the song we say, Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and wee little man was he. He climbed up in the sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. And it said, and as the Lord passed that way, almost as if like Jesus kind of like, oh, there's a guy up there. But as you dig into the text, I want you to think about this. Like, who is seeking whom? Like, Zacchaeus climbed up in the tree, but notice what happened. Jesus went to him. And not only did Jesus go to him, but you also notice another thing that happened there is that Jesus invited himself to his house. Do y'all notice this as a common thread in the Good Samaritan? Do y'all remember what Jesus said when he told us to go and do likewise? Did y'all remember the detail where it said he saw the man and then what? Had compassion. Do y'all remember the third detail? He went to him. Here's why I mention all of this. When we think hospitality, I know I have before, that I usually think of hospitality as just inviting in. And it is partly that. But hospitality is also going to. Jesus went to the tree. There was the man that was left half dead on the side of the road. He saw him, had compassion, and went to him. In fact, one of the ideas behind this is what people call neutral hospitality. That it's not necessarily even at times like you're having people maybe in your home that are strangers, which we are going to get to. But it's seeing needs in the streets, seeing people and going to them, having eyes that Jesus had. See, the challenge of this and what Jesus did was tables during that day, but I would kind of argue even today are kind of boundary markers for us. See, when y'all probably remember from your like civil rights history when they would speak of, you know, the lunchroom. And in that lunchroom, there would be a room divided. Certain groups could sit on this side and other groups could sit on this side. You might remember school buses. Certain people could sit there and certain people could sit there. And if you think about it, we're actually not too removed from that. But then if you go back to this time, y'all, you think that those boundary markers then were rough, that it was seen as probably an even deeper issue then. Because you know how they talked about the table? Here's what they described it as. Table fellowship. The table was seen as a boundary marker of who's in and who's out. But I want you to even think about like the way we talk about and think about our homes. Like, I do believe that there is a place for our homes to be like, I guess we might call it that safe place. And I used to kind of call my home like my refuge. And part of the reason is, I've told y'all before, like on Sunday nights, when we first got married and, you know, I'd preach several times during that day, I would go home and I would sit in the recliner and I would stare at a TV that sometimes had something on it, sometimes wouldn't. And I'm just sitting there and Lorianne was like, Andrew, are you okay? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. So, well, what are you thinking about? And I was like, nothing. She's like, no, I know you're thinking about something. Like, what's going on? And I was like, nothing's going on. She's like, no, something's got to be going. In her mind, something has to be happening. I'm like, I'm literally in here. There is blank space. Nothing is going on. And so I love those Sunday night, what we call now my nothing box. I go home and I have that nothing box just to relax, to let my shoulders down a little bit. And so while home does need to be a little bit of that, I love what Nick prayed in his prayer today, and I hope you didn't miss it. Nick said this, that we will see God as our refuge. Our homes are not our refuge. God is our refuge. Our homes are a tool. But also as we think about like the table in Jesus' day, what Jesus did with Zacchaeus, y'all, Zacchaeus was a guy that every single person loved to hate, and they had a reason behind it. He was stealing from people. But just like every person that's looking out their window, I'm telling you, they have a story behind their story. Like, I think that part of the reason why Zacchaeus did what he did is because of what Brandon mentioned last week. He was made fun of, he was joked on as a kid, and so he said, right, hurt people do what? They hurt people. Yet Jesus went to him and met him. Here's the other text, Hebrews 13. In Hebrews 13, if you remember the context, the context of Hebrews 13 for this verse was this, the supremacy of Christ. So if we are going to make Jesus Christ supreme, it then goes to this. It says, so let brotherly love continue. That's saying, all right, the brotherly love he's assuming we have here, it continues, and where does it continue? Let it continue by not neglecting to show hospitality to strangers. For thereby some have entertained angels unaware. Now, I love this verse for several reasons, but one of those is, have y'all ever found yourself, when you read this, like, I wonder if he means, like, literal angels? And Brandon did an awesome lesson on this a while back, and I loved it so much because we can debate all of those things because y'all have probably had moments like I have where, like, God gave you an opportunity, and then, like, you never saw that person again, or you don't know what happened or whatever. You know what I'm talking about? Well, we could debate it all we wanted, but here's what he does say about this, that when we show hospitality, heaven's involved. That should be enough. Heaven is involved when we show love and hospitality to the stranger. So I want you to think about how you see your neighbors, okay? And as you think about like how you see your neighbors, would you say this is more of maybe how you would describe yourself? Maybe you look at your neighbors from the standpoint of suspicion, and maybe you have a valid reason, but you're kind of like that lady. Y'all remember the show Bewitched? Y'all remember that neighbor? And man, she was the worst, and she would just look out her window all the time trying to find out what the next door neighbor was doing and what the next door was doing, and she could never get past that connection. You know why? Because she lived in a state of suspicion. And so because she was suspicious constantly of her neighbor, there was never connection with her neighbor. And so let me ask you, when you look out your window, would that more describe your posture? Now, as you have that image in your mind, I want to put another image in front of your mind of another person that was looking out their window, a guy in the Bible named Daniel. And if you remember, Daniel was given this decree. He had heard that there was a law that was being signed that you cannot pray to or go to anybody else other than the earthly king. But Daniel just kept praying. And we talked about a few months ago that what we noticed about Daniel is something that we hope we have in our own life, is that the crisis doesn't like create the discipline, it reveals the discipline. The thing that was there from the very beginning, he was praying every morning, in the middle of the day, probably in the end of the day. That's just a part of what his life was. But please don't miss what he was doing when he was going to his room. If you notice in the text, it says that he would go to his window. He would open it up, and then what did he do? He prayed for it. He prayed for the city that he was seeing. He was praying for Jerusalem. He was praying for what God could do there, and he was praying for the people. So I want you to think, like, what describes you? This picture or this picture? Because I'm telling you, if we become people that routinely pray for our city, it completely impacts the way we see our city. It's kind of like when I do premarital counseling, one of the things that couples probably get really tired of hearing me talk about, but is the importance of praying together. And when I talk with them about that, what I mention to them is not just, all right, let's pray, dear God, but ask, hey, what can I pray for you? What's going on? Because what happens is, in marriage, it's really hard to be rude, ugly, stank-faced to somebody you just prayed with, okay? It's possible, but it's harder, okay? And in the same way that if we are people that are constantly praying for those we see out our window, it will completely impact the way we see those that are out our window. So it's just like Rahab, there's our neighbors that see something, a kingdom. They see our rules. They see our social arrangements. Is it attractive? But also, are we seeing them the right way too? Here's the third one, and it's 1 Corinthians 11. And I know when you see this, you're like, wait, what does that have to do with hospitality? Because wouldn't that be more classified as fellowship, because that was about the Lord's Supper? I'll get to that in just a second. So in 1 Corinthians 11, this is probably one of the most used communion verses of all time. In fact, I remember for me, like in particular growing up, that someone would get up and read 1 Corinthians 11, and they would make this sentiment. Y'all could probably finish it for me. We need to make sure we don't take the Lord's Supper in a what? Unworthy manner. And the unworthy manner that was sometimes described or depicted was, well, when you take the Lord's Supper, don't have your mind distracted. That's the unworthy manner. Or don't like maybe have sin in your life. It's connected to that. But the unworthy manner was not actually a mind that was distracted, but a life that was divided between community. And notice what it said in verse 17. But in the following instructions, I do not commend you. So he's saying, I've been commending you, telling you you've been doing some really good stuff. This is what I think in parenting and coaching psychology, they call the positive sandwich approach. Hey, you did this, you did this, you did this. All right, now this is what you did wrong, okay? That's what he's doing here. He says, so here's what I got to condemn you about or commend you. Because when you come together, it's not for the better. So obviously, when we come together, it's always supposed to be for the better. People should believe like, man, that I feel better. That was awesome. That was for the better. But he says this to them, but when you guys get together, it's not for the better. It's actually for the worse. And he said, here's what it is. In the first place, when you come together as a church, I'm hearing that there are divisions among you. He says there's factions. So the unworthy manner was the fact that the table was divided. And if you look into the context, it was a case of the haves versus the have-nots. They were treating certain people really well because of maybe how they looked, maybe because of their background, their income status, whatever it is, and they were treating this other crowd completely different. So the unworthy manner he's speaking of was the fact that the table was divided when it was supposed to be a place of unity. It wasn't supposed to be a divided system of the haves versus the have-nots. And see, the reason that has to do with hospitality, he's drawing them back to what Jesus did in his ministry. The table was a place for everybody. The table was the opportunity of everybody. And so he's kind of drawing them back to remember, hey, what you were before the table, which was on the outside, you have to have that in your mind every time you take this communion. So just think about that. Just as much as praying for the city should impact how we see those in our city, what if every time we took communion, what we started to think was, I was at one time outside of Christ. At one time, I had no relationship with him. At one time, I had no seat at the table. I think it would challenge us to see people a little different. See, here's what I love about how simple Jesus makes everything, is he decides to make what was so central in his ministry something that was so accessible. And in one of the podcasts I listened to this week, he said, you know, have you noticed that over the past maybe 10 years, one of the things that we've been talking in churches way more about is hospitality? And he said, you know, if you think about that, it's kind of interesting because we've almost like radicalized what Jesus normalized. And I thought that was a good point. We've like, man, you know, they're showing hospitality to strangers. Yes. Like they're sitting with the people that are on this. Yes. Like, again, we've made what is radical, what Jesus made absolutely normal and central. And it's kind of neat because, you know, we talk about baptism and that, isn't it awesome how God gave us that opportunity and he picked the most abundant of resources, water. Similarly, he gave us one of the most accessible things that we're already doing, which is the table. But the challenge of hospitality is a few things. Number one, it is hard to talk about hospitality today in our Western 21st century world, and even in Western Christianity, I think to some degree, because especially like right now in the United States, Craig Storty put this out, and he said that in America right now, we are the most individualistic culture in the world. Us and the Scandinavians, that's on the deeper graph, but and individualism is basically the, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to look after me. And we even have that phrase that people say sometimes, you know, treat yourself. You know, like that's the whole mentality. You know, I'm going to look out for me. You even hear it sometimes in the way we talk about church. And I get what people mean. I don't think they have anything wrong by it. But sometimes we even say, I'm going church shopping. You know, just trying to find something to meet my needs. But yet God didn't design us just to be a bunch of spiritual consumers, but to be contributors, looking out for the needs of other people. So it is a challenge to be hospitable in a very individualistic society. I think the other challenge is this, that we can be more focused on the performance of it, that we miss the calling aspect of it. And I want to be very careful with this point because I don't want you to think that what I'm saying is that if you decorate your table nicely or you theme it, you make your home clean and put all this time and effort into it, that you're doing it for a show, because I do not believe that's the case. In fact, and she's going to kill me for this, I wasn't going to mention it. I mentioned it at the early service because it's not live streamed. My mom, I'm telling you, she's going to call me this afternoon. I'm going to be reprimanded in a big way. But my mom does not like to stand in front of people at all. She doesn't like to be, you know, like the center of the room or, you know, all eyes on her, anything like that. But one thing that I do want to brag on her about that I love so much about her is she loves having people in her home. Like it's a passion of hers. In fact, one of the things that she'll even do is like when she has people over, she'll theme it. She'll like set the table for all these things to match and like there to be a little sign and these little things, these little name cards that match. Like that's her, because, you know, for her, that's the way she can serve. And to her, that's her saying, hey, I'm just kind of trying to give my best to it. She's not doing it because of performance. She's doing it just because she loves. And this is the way she feels like she can serve. So please understand, that's not what I'm talking about. But I am talking about the heart of it, that when it happens, that sometimes we call it entertaining when it's actually supposed to be hospitality. Because what entertaining is, well, I want to make sure I look good. When hospitality is, I want to make sure Jesus looks good. Entertaining is more focused on the outer appearance of everything, while the hospitality is more about the heart of the people and seeing the people that are in your home. Being preoccupied with the mess, right, is focused on is like the entertainment focus, while the other, hospitality, is being more humbled by the mess in that you can still serve. One's about impressing, and the other is about serving. And the other challenge is what we'll call the soup kitchen versus the potluck mentality. There's a book that I got to read for school that depicted this as one of the big challenges that we experience today when it comes to hospitality. And what the soup kitchen mindset is that when we serve other people, and sometimes we don't even notice this, I think it happens very subtly, but when we serve other people, it's kind of like, here you go, next. All right, here you go, next. Here you go, next. And not that in every instance that's wrong, but sometimes what happens is, it's kind of like if you've ever read the book When Helping Hurts, that sometimes we can help people in a way that we think helps them, and so we give them what we want to give them, and what happens is it's kind of like a soup kitchen. We're going to give you this if you'll move on down the line. We're going to give you this, and if you'll kind of kindly move on down the line. And so what happens is it's transactional. And when it's transactional, that relationship never evolves. And when it's transactional, you and I never evolve. We don't become what we talked about earlier, what Jesus was as that first fruit. And so the potluck mentality is that when I serve somebody, and we have Service Sunday coming up in just a little bit, that the whole point of Service Sunday and our opportunities we create to serve other people is not for a photo op. The whole point of Service Sunday is to create opportunities of fellowship. Y'all might remember this, that we started last year getting to serve a group at the Child Development Center for kids that can't afford daycare. And there is the sweetest lady that runs that. And Joe and a bunch of the empty nesters met there that day, did a bunch of stuff. And they have been going back every single week, going to visit there, going to meet there, going to do different things there. That's what we're talking about. It's building a relationship with the people. And the potluck mentality is not, here, you have this and you move on down the line. The potluck mentality is, I'm going to bring something to the table and so are you. In fact, one of the quickest ways to help alleviate poverty is for when people are going through a difficult time and they are in a time of maybe food insecurity or they are living in poverty. It's two things. It's not us dividing the groups of people in our communities into two groups, those that help and those that need help. Guys, we're both. But the other part of it is that as we see those needs in the community and how we can help alleviate that poverty is by simply saying, hey, you bring something to the table. Helping that person see that they have value. See, potluck mentality is where everybody contributes. And everybody is needed. Everybody's wanted. But for me, when I read what Brain and I are using as kind of like one of our main texts for this series, the thing that kept sticking out to me about this first rhythm, do you remember what it said? Making space for the gospel, i.e. hospitality. That's the challenge, isn't it? Got to make it. It's not going to come easy. You have to say no to some stuff, and you'll have to say yes to some stuff. And so as I kind of was trying to think about, all right, what's the action step? I know you can't read all that, and I'm not expecting you to. What I did was, for the Made for Monday video tomorrow, when it goes out, there's going to be this picture with it. And so my challenge for you is this. I want you to do something. Plan it, organize it, do it this week. Some type of hospitality, love for the stranger. So you can text somebody today, you can plan it today, and I put on here examples of hospitality that are inviting to and going to. They're both. And I believe the ideas are in all of your hearts, but I'll give you an idea. Maybe what you do is, if you got little ones, you could say, hey, there's this person down the street that's maybe gone through something, or this person on the street we've never even met. We're going to get like a terracotta pot. We're going to put some a flower in it. And what we're going to do is we're going to go visit this person and just pray for them. It could be at work. Somebody's going through something and you invite them out for coffee and bring that culture of prayer mentality there to the neighborhood. Again, all of this will be out tomorrow, but I just want to encourage you to think of some way in your own context to be hospitable. And so I want to leave you with two things. a question and the invitation. So here's the question. If you were to look at your life right now, who would you say, like if you viewed it kind of like a table, who would you say have been your regular invited guests? And so as you think about that question, the second thing I want to offer you is the invitation. I love the song that we sang earlier, Come to the Table of Mercy. And I hope that every time we get to gather around the Lord's Supper table and we get to eat the bread and we get to drink the cup, we're reminded that, you know, we were at one time not having a seat at the table, but now we are seated. And I don't know if y'all remember ever a time like showing up at lunch room or whatever, and you walk into a new school and you're like holding your tray and you don't know where to sit. This is like the most awkward, awful feeling. But isn't it awesome to know that we serve a God that makes us, as in our insecurities, when we felt like we had no place, we had no seat, we get to go from seatless to seated. And so I hope for all of us, we appreciate what we get to experience every week, but also want others to experience the same. And so if you have a need today, maybe it's to give your life to Christ, to go into the watery grave of baptism and to come out brand new, to have that seat at the table. There's going to be elders also at every single one of the exits. Maybe what you need is a specific prayer for something that you've been going through, a challenge that you've experienced. It would be an honor to get to pray for you. Whatever need that you have today, please come while we stand and while we sing.